Hi everyone, Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it. Hello there, everybody out there in internet land. Another session, another season here of Money Talks. This is Russ looking at you and you looking at me from RST Coaching Academy, host of Money Talks out of Daytona Beach, Florida. It's great to have you with us today. And it's great to have my new friend, Fred Carey from La Jolla, California. This fella here, I was looking at his sheet, his biog kind of here of what he does, what he's been about. And I'm going to go through the things that he listed here. Okay. Senior, he must have a pretty busy business card. I don't know how he has room for all of these things, but we have senior executive, strategic consultant, attorney, and investment banker. He's building global companies from startup stage through the exit stage, either through an IPO or an M&A. And so there's the man in a nutshell who's going to be speaking to you today about him, but then ultimately about you and how he can help you in the long run. He oversees development and growth of over 250 startups, and he's led many mergers and acquisitions, both as an executive and as a counsel. So he's been a busy man. How long you been doing this, Fred?
Oh, geez. I drink old fashions now. When I started doing this, they just used to be called fashions. Long time, many decades, a good 3 decades of building companies, and another decade before then of building my first two. So I've been an entrepreneur since I was an adult, and it's not because that was my destiny, although it's turned out to be that way. It was more because corporate America wouldn't have the likes of me.
I see. You were too much for them, huh?
Exactly.
Too forward thinking, too much of a revolutionary for the corporate world. And so it was time to strike out on your own.
Absolutely.
Isn't that great? Us entrepreneurs, we don't like to be hogtied, do we?
No, we
like to be able to envision and dream and think and plan and execute. And when it works, then we get to take the credit. And if it doesn't work, then we take the licks and dust ourselves off and set out maybe on something else, or maybe just restart ourselves and do it better the next time, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So as an attorney, did you start with a law degree, or is that something that kind of evolved in your process of development?
I started out with 6 months of community college and built my first couple of companies with that. And then opportunistically, there was a possibility of me becoming an immediate partner in a law firm. And so I had to go to law school to make that happen. So,
I see.
Yeah.
6 months of community college. And what was your course of study?
Whatever didn't require much work. Just strictly liberal arts stuff. I started out, I was a musician, and I thought that was going to be my career path. And so college wasn't really important to me. And then all of a sudden I started up one company, and then I started up another, and I started thinking, well, I better get an education here along the way.
All right. So you probably realized that what you wanted to really do, it wasn't school that was going to prepare you for that. You know, a college degree, I've got a degree in business management, but you know, that's managing somebody else's business, not managing my own. It's a whole different world, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not, you know, I ended up getting an international MBA as well. And what was important about the MBA, I'd already led a company that went public at the time I decided to do that. And what I learned in my MBA program is kind of why I was doing all the things I was already doing. I was doing things on my gut basis, and now I knew the science behind what I was doing to to get me to where I had gotten already.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. I remember for myself when I was in the University of Wisconsin in Whitewater back in the late 60s in the School of Business. I remember someone saying, an instructor saying, that a lot of this is just good sound logic. But then what they try to help people do is to kind of package it into something that is useful. But
yeah,
so much of it is just wisdom and logic. And
yeah.
It's not rocket science. We're not trying to design a spaceship or anything like that. So a lot of it is just what's inside of us and kind of an intuitive nature about us for
Yeah, exactly.
what's going to fly and maybe what's not going to fly,
exactly.
And also the risk factor that we're willing to do that. We're willing to take the risk. A lot of people are interested in business, but they're not willing to step out and take the risk. Maybe their wives won't let them. Maybe their own fears won't let them. Right?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that anybody in your audience is considering starting their own business, becoming an entrepreneur, being their own boss. They need a warning, just like on the side of a pack of cigarettes. You need a warning about entrepreneurship because it is dangerous and it is hard, and there's a lot of failure that comes with the territory. And if you all you got to do is look at the allegedly richest, or now one of the richest men in the world, Elon Musk, and go find his conversation on YouTube where he's talking about 2008 and what a horrible year that was for him, where he almost lost everything. He wouldn't even know who he was, and he's sitting there crying, talking about, tearing up, talking about, you know, SpaceX and Tesla, that he took all the money he had left from his PayPal days, put every penny in there, and it still looked like everything was going to go to hell. And
Yeah.
so, you know, that entrepreneurial journey, the pain part of it never ends, and the success part of it continues, but it's fleeting. You got to build it up again, build it up again, build it up again. So if you're not capable of this kind of never-ending journey, then you probably shouldn't be an entrepreneur at all.
Yeah, if you don't have the intestinal fortitude to press on through. You know, we look at these people like Elon Musk and Bill Gates and all these other people. None of them started out super successful and riding high, did they? They all started out and had to pay their dues.
It's a journey, and you know, that same 2008, at the end of the year, Elon had took his last $90 million and ended up sleeping on the couch of friends in order to have enough money to be able to live month to month. So
interesting.
It never does end, but it's those people that change the world. So if you
well,
want,
exactly,
you know,
yeah, and for myself, I love business. I tell people that I'm a hopeless entrepreneur. I hear about a business and my little antennas go up, you know, and my ears get perked, and it's like, oh, wow, gee whiz. But I guess now at the age of 75 here, I'm thinking this is what I want to do the rest of the years that I have. And this is do, you know, business and individual coaching and sales training. And so it's like, some of these other things sound really cool, maybe on the side, but this is the focus. And so that it, sometimes that's what a person has to do, is just focus on what they're really going to be about and not get sidetracked to the right or to the left about maybe other things, the grass being greener on the other side, and just dig in and press on and make it work, right?
Yeah, well, and as you said, you're 75 now, and I can tell you that those years go by in a flash. And so, you know, if you're sitting there and you want to do something, you want to be different, and you want to find your own way, just start. Start.
Yep.
There's a lot of support. There's a lot of, you know, programs like yours. There's a ton of information on the internet to help you. My own company, Idea Pros, we help entrepreneurs launch businesses all the time. So there's a support system out there for you. You just got to get going, and you know, don't worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow may never get here. So worry
true.
About
Have you found that as you, I don't know, network with people, meet new individuals, that Many people think, well, I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right, I don't need any help. You find that kind of a common response to an offer to hand out, to extend a hand of help?
The people that feel that way aren't typically knocking on my door to get help. You know, the people that want help, they're including, and from my own personal experiences, people that are making $500,000 a year as an employee, and they wake up every morning and they hate their lives, you know, and they're getting the financial compensation that they believe they deserve, but they're not getting that emotional, passion-driven, purpose-driven result that they want to see in their own lives. And as we said, you know, 100 years goes by really fast.
And the satisfaction that having started something and seeing it through to completion. That satisfaction that brings, I put my family through some interesting times, I know, in my quest, and how much easier it would have been just to have gotten a 9 to 5, 40-hour a week job. But there was just something in me that said, I got to do this on my own. I just that did not appeal to me at all. And during the rocky road, bless her heart, my wife has stuck with me through the thick and thin of it all. And I think that's important too, is to have a family that's at least with the person, with you, kind of had my back and encouragement and that kind of thing. So you oversee the development and growth of over 250 startups. Are those are current clients that you're working with, continuing on, taking them farther and farther?
We're up to about 400 now, actually. When we start with somebody, they really come to us with an idea, and we build them up as an entrepreneur. We build up their company and their first product, and we set them up for launch. So we're there as a minority shareholder. We typically we own 30%
I
of the
see.
companies that we start together. So all 400 of them are my babies, even the ones that, you know, didn't turn out so well as kids, and the ones that have been the superstars. You know, they're all, you have to love them all equally, you keep nurturing them for their entire life cycle. So
Yeah,
it's a
indeed.
lot of work.
That's great. So your involvement in company ownership, is that was that a financial investment on your part or more of a sweat equity piece?
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite. The person, the founder that comes in, makes the financial contribution because they're buying a whole company. You know, there's a lot of companies out there that will help you build your app or engineer your product or get you a patent or help you with marketing, but we literally become your co-founder, and we do every piece of work that needs to be done from the idea to a nationwide launch. So they contribute capital, and we contribute all of our resources to the project. They end up with 70%, we end up with 30. So that's how that works.
Got it. So in answer to the question, you're putting yourself into it, your expertise and so on, but not necessarily your finance and your funds.
Yeah, we don't give money to a first-time entrepreneur. Because I think that's a broken business model. What we do is we have people who have the most of the time, people who come to us are out like, where can I get my app built? Things like that. And our ads will say, the last thing you need is an app. You need a business. You need a co-founder. You need to figure out what valuable stuff you have and who really needs it. And the app is really just the delivery mechanism to combine those two things. So why not build an entire company for what you were going to pay to build an app? And we've had 100,000 applications to work with us in the last 3 years. So the demand is overwhelming.
Oh, wow. So I imagine you go through an interview process to an application and an interview process to pick their brain basically of what they want to accomplish and what they're willing to put into it and that kind of thing. And I imagine you've probably turned a few down in the course of your tenure because they just didn't meet your criteria. Do you know if any of those have continued on themselves and still done anything?
The ones that we've said no to?
Yeah.
No, I haven't had that kind of Shark Tank moment where you have founders like Ring, the Ring founder that's going on to do a $1 billion company and rejected by all the sharks. I haven't had that experience. It doesn't mean that it's not out there happening, just I haven't been mindful of it. But
Yeah,
we have
yeah.
a lot to focus on with the ones we've said yes to, and we're working 7 days a week to make those happen.
I bet you probably have a team too, I imagine, a whole staff of all these, experts in their particular field and that kind of thing. Not, it doesn't just revolve around you, I hope.
Well, yeah, it does not. We have experts in every arena of what you need to do. Building a company starts with understanding what it is you're building and who the competitors are and what the market size is and where the opportunities are in that marketplace. And we start there and go through everything: naming, branding, positioning, app development or engineering, website development, strategies, social media establishment, every. And then at the end, pitch decks and introductions to go raise capital that you're going to need once you're ready to launch. So we li literally have every element of what needs to be done to go from your pregnant idea to your company. We have all the elements of those in-house. So lots
I
of good
understand.
work here.
Okay. Are you specializing in a particular industry or industries?
We don't do any Elon Musk rocket launches, things like that. We're more on consumer level. We do a lot of B2C stuff, and it could be anywhere on the software side from apps. We have about I think about 120 some of our projects are apps to consumer goods, fashion, beauty, food, electronics, literally all those the types of things that you can start a business with a few million dollars, not a few hundred million.
Got it. And when you have you had background in each of those particular industries, or business principles are business principles, basically. But did you've probably gained a lot of experience in these particular industries as you've gone along. But how did that work starting out when maybe you've never worked with a company that was an apparel company, for example.
That's a great question. And I found out that fundamentally, if you want to start a business from nothing, there are several key things that you need to do. And while we don't have our own personal expertise in the fashion world, for example, I hire people that do. When we'll bring in advisors, like for example, we have one fashion brand that we're building. We brought in the chief designer for Ralph Lauren Polo, who had 200 designers under her. She came in, supervised the part of the project of where are we going to get this stuff built? How's it going to be built? How are we going to differentiate ourselves? So we're always reaching out to different experts and in different verticals. But fundamentally, you have the same critical components and
Right.
same milestones you need to go through when you're building any company.
Exactly right. Now, such an individual as that, would that person be like an hourly paid consultant, or how is that? Is that out of your pocket or out of the business owner's pocket?
Yeah, it would be out of my pocket.
Okay.
Typically, when somebody comes to work with us, if they're doing this whole co-founder thing, they pay one amount of money, and it's around on average it's $100,000 that they pay us, and literally they get about $500,000 worth of stuff for it, and we cover all those types of costs: the consultants, contractors, developers, all of that. We cover all the charges, and because we do so many of them, we get things at a reduced rate that makes it feasible for us to do that. Otherwise, to build what we build, you're literally going to spend $500,000.
I see. Okay. Now, you probably have a a lower level of, I don't know, investment, money, whatever the criteria is that you're going to work with. Like, you know, somebody comes up to you and says, well, I'd like to start this retail store, one store, you know, I got $100,000 to invest. Is that enough action to tweak your interest, or are you, what's your, do you have a bottom end criteria how that you work with?
Yeah, you know, what's happened here over the last few years, and which caused me last year to not even take any new partners for several months while I figured this out, is that we only had that one thing. You're either all in or we don't want to talk to you. But over the last several months, we've developed a complete set of solutions that start at free. If you go to ideapros.com now, the very first thing you see is free membership. You click onto that and you're able to get weekly updates from us. Twice a month, we do 2-hour, 3-hour workshops on different subjects you need to know. All of it's for free. And we've built up a funnel where you can go from free to $50 to $1,000 to $5,000, whatever types of things you need to learn next and in your growth as a founder who wants to build a company. So we have all sorts of solutions now.
Wonderful. That's really great. It's helping you diversify your business in the whole process. And who knows, some of those companies may get to the point that they need you and all that you have and are willing to pay for it. And most you've seen them grow and you know their potential.
Most of them end up that way. When they start, if they're going up the food chain, if you will, most of them end up that way that, oh, you know what, I'm ready to launch. I want to be your partner. We'll give them a credit for what they spent already. And we also have a source now that we actually can help them fund their own project if they don't have the money. So we have solutions for everybody.
Understood. That's great. Speaking of funding, do most of your clients or partners, do they come with cash in hand, or are they needing a handout or a loan or something to get them boosted up, get going?
They show up with cash.
They do.
It's surprising how many. These are people that are the typical entrepreneur that we see is 30 to 55 years old. They're doing well already in corporate America. They're working their way up, but they're either upper middle management or upper management. They have a great career path and they hate their lives. And we're there to change that. So they have the capital. They're ready to bail on corporate world, and they have the capital together to do a piece of what they need to do. And for the same amount of money, they get to do all of it. So and have a very experienced co-founder.
Oh, that's great. So do the majority of these individuals, their business concept, is it kind of in line with what they've been doing career-wise, or is it maybe totally something brand new?
It goes both ways. I'm happy when it's in line with what they already know, because that makes my job easier.
Sure.
But a lot of times it's something radically different. You know, sometimes somebody's been in kind of the electronics field and they want to make a beauty product because they've been experimenting for the last 5 years, and everybody tells them how great their skin looks, and they want to monetize that. You know, so it's all over the place, but certainly, I like it when it's kind of aligned with what they had been doing.
So they have the basic expertise in what it was they were doing. Not that they know how to run a business yet, but they've got the basic background. Well, that's really neat.
Yeah,
that's really neat. I just love business, and I love to hear stories about somebody that's come along and says, I got this idea, and then they find the wherewithal, you know, financially and internally to be able to make that actually happen.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
On your page here, there was five questions that were suggested to ask you? And I bet you know the answers to all these because you probably anticipated the questions. So I'm going to hit you with these as we're winding down here a little bit. And yeah, people would go ahead.
Let me interrupt again. Newsflash for you and the audience. I never read anything. So my team may have suggested them, but I'm going to hear them the same time as the rest of your audience.
Oh, wow. Well, here they are. This section, folks, is entitled Questions to Ask Fred. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to hit him up with some stuff. And I don't think they're real difficult things because of his experience in this. But we want to hear what you've got to say to this. So let's get started with this here. Question and answer. Question is, how do we, that is, how do you, well, no, actually, how do we start changing lives from your perspective?
See, that's not so easy. here's how you change lives, though. You start with your own. We get caught in what we consider to be our comfort zone. And if you look at it, it's the same type of comfort zone that a bird has in a cage. You know, you keep a bird in a cage for a couple of years, then you open that cage door, the bird's not leaving, even though there's this wild world ahead of them where they can do so much more, learn so much more, experience so much better of a life, and they don't leave that cage. And that's what we do. We have the prison of our comfort zones that we think, I'm making enough money, we got a nice house, the kids are doing okay, I don't beat my dog, that's how I'm going to keep my life. But if you have this yearning desire to do more, to be better, to try harder, and you don't act first with yourself, then you're not going to be able to help others. But when you do start working on your own and you do start working on yourself, that's when you have that momentum to start making positive changes, not only in your own life, but in the lives of those people around you. And hopefully that'll expand out to a greater world of good that you can do.
That makes sense. In investing in yourself and changing your mindset is what you're referring to, basically, is getting this individual, like you said, a 55-year-old professional making $500,000, hates his life, hates his job, but he's comfortable. And it's like, okay, well, how much longer do you want to be doing that? Get yourself fixed up and get ready to step out and you know, and see these, step out of the cage, basically, the bird cage, and see all that you can accomplish, even at the age of 55 or whatever, you know, the person is. There's no limit. There's no limit to the age group that we can jump out and try something new. All right. How do I turn my ideas into a business?
Well, you don't do what most of America does. The number one failure point for new businesses in the United States is that founders created something that there's no demand for. You would think it's, we don't have enough money, we're having trouble with inventory, but no, it's the fact that you've made something that nobody wants. And so the first step to really starting your own business is knowledge. You know, what am I trying to do? Who else is out there doing it? How big is this market? How much is this market growing? Are there holes, meaning opportunities, in that market space? We all hate competitors when we're starting out a business, but competitors are our lifeblood because they're proving up that there's a demand for what you have to offer. You just have to do it better. You have to find the weak spots and make them better. So how you turn your idea to a business, you start by starting and learning about it and learning the scope of what it is you're trying to do. You know, I talk about, I use an absurd example that will really resonate. If I was asking you to come be the coach of my new team, professional team, and I couldn't tell you what the sport was, what the size of the audience was, how quickly it was growing, who the competitors are, what are the weak spots that we can exploit, you know, what are the even the rules of the game, and if I can't tell you any of those things, I'm never going to win as a coach. I don't know what I'm doing. But that's precisely what we do as entrepreneurs when we want to start our own business. We have an idea. We think it's a great idea. Mom thinks it's awesome. And we go out and we launch it without knowing the rules of the game. So that's the first thing you really need to do. Know what you're
The
doing.
Market analysis, market research. So you come up with a widget. But as it turns out, if they would do the research, they'd say, you know what? This is a cool widget for me, but nobody wants it. But
right.
isn't it sometimes, though, that an invention is created and then the market appears? Like, who the heck knew that people needed an iPod or an iPad until there was one? And then, but that probably created a little extra challenge because people had to get sold on that aspect that, hey, I need one of these. You know what I mean? So that's probably part of it too, but that can take some time and take some money.
However, the demand was already there. That's what we do as nobody knew what an iPod was, but everybody knew that they needed information. So the demand was information, instant access to information. And the more convenient you can make it, the better it is for me. Nobody knew they wanted a car when horses were pulling everybody around. But the car didn't, like the iPod, didn't solve a new problem that we had to tell people was a problem. The car was a competitor to the horse because the problem was transportation, movement, right? And just like the iPod, although nobody knew this is what was going to be created, we all knew that we wanted information, we wanted it at our fingertips, and we wanted to be able to have it be as mobile as possible. So you were building into the demand that was already there, creating new things, but creating new things in an area where you knew that there was a massive demand.
And the people knew they needed or wanted something, they just didn't know what it was until suddenly there it was.
Yeah, voila, here it is.
Yeah, super duper, good answer. All right, what does it take to be a successful business owner?
Have a successful business, that's an easy one. The resilience and the ability to constantly trying to obsolete yourself. Because when we start building a company and it starts becoming successful, we get all full of ourselves and we want to focus there. But the more successful you become as any kind of a business owner, the more competitors are going to look at you and try to copy you and try to better you. And so if you're not trying to better yourself and what you're doing, there's going to be a competitor out on the sideline that's going to show up with the next iPod that is going to take your product and or service and make it not as appealing as it was before. So constantly, I guess a more positive way of saying it is constantly trying to reinvent yourself, but make yourself obsolete. The same thing. Somebody else is going to do it if you don't. So always invent, always look for better ways of doing what you're doing, providing a service you provide, providing products you provide, find better ways to do things and never stop.
Don't rest on your laurels then, basically.
Absolutely.
Is just, I've reached this income level, this income goal, and now I'm just going to sit back and coast. And that person is going to probably find themselves down at the bottom in short order, because like you said, the competition. And that's the next question is, how do I avoid competition? Can you avoid it?
Yeah, you can avoid competition by creating one of those companies that are the number one source of failure in the US. You know, you're creating something that nobody wants. That's how you avoid competition. Otherwise, if there is a demand for things, there's inherent competition. Like I said, the horse and the car, right? The competition showed up because people needed transportation. Car and horses were competing against each other. And the same thing, if you don't have competitors, you don't have a market, because the lack of competitors show that you don't have a demand in most cases. There are the very, very rare exceptions to that, where you have a business that completely dominates something so much that there are no relevant competitors. eBay could be a fairly good example. You know, this is really the only auction place that has any type of momentum. But for the most of the part, you know, for every Uber, there's a Lyft. And for every Facebook, there's an Instagram. And that's why Facebook bought Instagram. And, you know, and Snapchat. And there are a lot of different things out there that serve different communities with the same type of thing that they want. And so you don't avoid competitors unless you can create something that has zero appeal. Nobody wants it. Then you won't have any competitors.
Good point. You know, and so us as people, individuals, are going to try to stay away from competition, shun it. But in reality, it's really a healthy thing. Because it, number one, like you said, it indicates that there is a market. And number two, it helps to spur you on, the business owner, to greater achievement, to create a better product, to develop a better company, right?
Yeah. And think of it this way, too. If you grow a business and you want to start growing rapidly, you're going to need outside money. And when you go out and get outside capital, if you're not mortgaging your house or getting an SBA loan, you're going to outside investors. And competitors help you. Because when you think about this, if I'm going to you and I'm trying to get $100,000 for my startup, and I tell you, this is revolutionary. We're changing the entire world. Nobody's ever thought about this. I know that the customers are out there, but I've got this great golden widget that I want to create, and I need your money. Investors don't want to hear about revolution unless you've successfully created several revolutions in your past, which none of us have. They want to hear about evolution. So that's why competitors are healthy for you when you're raising capital, because you can say, this is the market that I want to be in. This market has been proven out by these three competitors. And these three competitors became billion-dollar companies in short order, providing the services that all these clamoring clients and customers want. But these customers are all pissed off about one thing, and that is that none of these $3 billion companies are providing the one thing that these guys all want. And my company has invented that one thing. Now, you've proven up that there's a big market, there's a big demand, you've proven up that you can become billion-dollar companies in there even without providing the most important thing that that market needs. And now you're validating yourself. Hey, we're no smarter than anybody else. We just heard our audience and we created a product that serves their need. That is what an investor will invest in. And so you don't want to shun competitors. You want to learn how to be a better company because of them.
Yeah, so it's not so much creating a new widget, but creating a better widget.
Exactly.
Yeah. That is interesting. Very interesting. And so you get the piggyback off of the competition, what's going on out there, and make it better, make your product better in the process.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, how do you compete against a billion-dollar company? You do what they do poorly.
Yeah. Yeah. And you find that need and fill it with a new product that's going to enhance and put you over the top from the competition.
Yep.
So far you've got all these answers correct.
All right.
So the last one here is, how important is naming, branding, and positioning?
Wow. You know, that
it's a three-part question, I guess, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's the one that drives me nuts. We want to go to our consumers, our clients, to help us with almost anything, right? And I'll tell you right up front, hey, if you want to build this product, go ahead and take surveys, do tests, have prototypes, have your audience prove out what you're building. But the only thing that I say, do not have your audience, your customers, be involved in at all is your naming, your branding, your positioning. Why? Because that is, you're going into the deep, dark soul of your consumers if you're doing it right, and a consumer doesn't know how to do it right. I mean, imagine sitting in front of an audience of 1,000 people 30 years ago. and you show up in your little black t-shirt and you say, hey, I have a new company. I'm going to compete against Microsoft and against IBM and digital equipment. And you roll off 10, 15 different industrial giants of that era. And you say, I want to call my company Apple. Not one person in that audience is going to raise their hand and say, that's a great idea. How did I not think of that? They didn't think of it because the consumer doesn't have the mindset to come up with provocative, evocative type of names. Or companies like Virgin for an airline. You know, can you imagine sitting in an airline terminal and hey, there's a new airline. It's going to be called Virgin. What do you think of that? There's not one person getting ready to fly that's going to think that that's a great idea. And so it's critically important. And the best companies are the ones that can align what they're doing, not with their product, but with the emotional impact it gives to their consumer. For example, you guys, whoever's listening, go to Instagram, go to the Red Bull page. And I dare you to find cans of Red Bull. You'll see them scattered about in an explosion or something. But Red Bull, on their entire Instagram page, it's all about action, jumping, race cars, the racing, running. You know, it's all about the emotional impact that the brand wants to give you. And so, for the rest of us, we would show different cans of Red Bull in every one of these little things. And look how beautiful my can looks. And when you buy it, you know, Apple as well, they sell emotion. Think differently. The reason Apple became what they became today is highlighted in one commercial they did about the crazies. And if you guys haven't seen that commercial, go to YouTube, Apple the Crazies. And it's Apple a 1 minute, black and white. It's all the people in the world from Gandhi to Martin Luther King to Muhammad Ali to Albert Einstein, all the people that were different. All right. And their whole Think Different campaign and how you can be part of something more important because it's those crazies that change the world. That's how Apple turned around from being a 4% margin company to what they became today.
Wow. And it's the names that you just threw out, the companies like Apple, Virgin, of course it's Virgin Airlines, but what was the third one you mentioned? Apple and
yeah, there's a whole bunch of them. I can give you Caterpillar for tractors, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. I guess what I'm getting at is the name does not necessarily have to be descriptive of the product.
Yeah, Red Bull was the other one I was talking about. It's the opposite of descriptive. You want evocative names. You know, when somebody comes to me and they already have a name, that name has zero chance of surviving going through our system because it really is 99 times out of 100 a descriptive name. And descriptive names are not memorable. They're hard to patent, hard to copyright. And you can't build a story around a descriptive name. You can build, right? It's hard to build a story around Microsoft. It's easy to build a story around Apple.
Wow. I'd never thought of that. I guess I kind of thought that it should be descriptive of what the company does. So that's very, very enlightening to me.
Yeah.
Cool. And then we got branding and positioning. Those are three different animals, aren't they?
Right. So your brand is not what you create. Your brand is what your customer perceives. And so if you want your brand to stand for something, then every single thing you do needs to be consistent with that. You can't waver from the emotional impact you're trying to create for your audience. And so the brand of Apple, I'll show you a good example. Apple does it really well, right? Because Apple starts with the why, and a much wiser man than me gave this example. But when you start with Apple, you start with the core. You know, we believe in doing things different. We believe in creating the best of the best, not only in what we have, but in our customers, the people that rely on us as a brand. And with everything we do, we keep that in mind. What we're all about is what you're all about. And oh, by the way, we happen to sell computers. Would you like to buy one? And most of us lead with, we happen to sell computers. Would you like to buy one? With Apple, you have that emotional connection first. That when you have the emotional connection with the company, you become part of that brand. And that's why Apple people are so loyal to that brand, because they have that emotional connection. Company that doesn't do it as well, to me, is Target. Target, obviously, they're making shit ton of money, and they're a big brand. But I believe they try to position themselves in a way that others don't see them. So Target outward said, our brand is this, we're cool, we're young, you know, we got the thing, we got the dog walking by, we got all these people trying on all these great clothes. But to us as an audience, we're like, oh, we can buy cheap shit there. You know, it's a different, our version of Target is not the version that they're projecting. So they think that their brand means this. We think their brand means, okay, I can get cheap stuff there. There's a wide variety of things. I can save money, halfway decent quality, right? So there's a mismatch there. So again, your brand essence is what your audience believes you are, not what you believe you are.
I'll be darned. That is really enlightening.
Yeah.
So,
and the last thing is the positioning side of it. You know, positioning is just where you put yourself in the marketplace. And that's all, these are all fundamental things. Sometimes I get pissed off when we go through this whole process and we're 6 months down the road and one of our partners is just like, all I got was a name. And companies spend $250,000 figuring this stuff out. And so the positioning is, what's my place in the market? How am I going to stand out for the the crowd? You know, you got BMW, and you have Mercedes, and BMW positions themselves as the ultimate driving machine, right? So when you think of BMW, although they're both in the same price category, you're thinking, all right, BMW, probably a little bit younger audience, and Mercedes is more like the ultimate luxury. You know, I'm going to be safe, I'm going to have soft seats, I'm going to be able to drive a long distance without having fatigue. So here you have two different brands competing, but positioning way differently.
And I see. BMW is ultimate driving machine. That is, that's kind of a motto of theirs too.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is part of their positioning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll hit you up with a little free consultation here.
Okay.
My name, company name, RST Coaching Academy. Can you figure out that, yeah, I come from the group that thinks your company name should be indicative of what you do. So given what I do, selling, you know, online training courses, doing online or in-person individual and business courses, should I have a different name for my company?
Oh,
this will probably cost me $100,000, folks. I'm probably going to get a bill.
Exactly. Well, so names that are generic, explain what you do, right? To if you want to really resonate your audience, explain what they're going to get out of it, the emotional feeling they're going to have, you know, what happens at the opposite end of your training. Look at the things. And by the way, I wouldn't give you an immediate name, but I would do things like I'd reach out to people who have gone through my system and say, hey, could you write down and just a phrase, not even a full sentence, just what did you get from my experience here? What did you learn? What emotional impact did it give you?
Yeah.
And you're going to find your name in their answers. You know, it could be when you're dealing with the emotional impact of something like that, you know, it could be feel things like, I got real validation in my ideas, or I became much more learned about what I was trying to do and much more focused. And so you may come up with names like Sherpa or names that, you know, kind of more of the guide, the mentor to people's successes, Success Academy, you know, things that are going to resonate with the emotional impact that your audience gets. And like even companies like Virgin, for example, you find out that you're the one that was the virgin because you're having a flying experience like you never had before. You know, the tenants are nicer, the seats are nicer, there's more entertainment, the way they treat you is different than the way you've been used to being marshaled in and out of an airplane, and all of a sudden you're the virgin, and now your whole impact of that name is that this is refreshing, this is a better experience. You know, I'm being treated, no matter what class I'm flying in, I'm being treated as an individual. And so, you know, finding for any company, finding that that element of what you're getting from your audience. And by the way, Idea Pros is not a great name. I'm proud to say I didn't name it.
What's not a great name?
My company name, Idea Pros, is not a great name. The name, I had a partner and he'd come up with a name and I'm like, all right, let's go with it. But, you know, I would have named it something like Evolve or something like that, where we're kind of changing, you know, Evolve Partners, Evolve Super Venture Partners. In fact, we have that as a tagline, something that allows people to kind of think, I'm going to go in, I'm going to be different when I come out the other end. Those types of names are much more powerful.
Cool. But now in your case, is it too late for you to change the name?
Well, it's never too late to change a name. You know, Accenture changed their name after they were a multi-billion-dollar, multi-global organization. But it's hard, you know, especially when you have limited budget. You know, we're still a small company, even though we serve the United States and some other countries. It's the education required in changing your name means spending marketing dollars in that promotion. In some cases, it's a good thing to do. Like, for example, Chevy Nova, when they sold the Chevy Nova in South America, they had to change their name because Nova means don't go, it doesn't run. And so Nova was not a good name. So sometimes, but you know, if you find yourself that you're growing business, you're still small, but you're growing, now's the time, you know, come up with something. If you have big plans of getting bigger, then go ahead and start thinking about that and start making that change now. So that
I like that. I like what you threw out there kind of casually, but it rang with me. It was Success Academy. I mean, golly gee, you know, and one of the things with the name of my company, Coaching Academy, some people construe that as I do sports coaching.
Right.
So that's
right.
something to overcome in the process. And then you've got Grant Cardone that I'm associated with, and he has made his name, his company name, and his brand. But he's been nurturing that for 40 years.
Right.
So whatever.
Right.
Cool,
and,
man.
And mind you, you know, behind you, he has 10X, right? So 10X, 10X is, in a sense, it's descriptive, but in another sense, it's fanciful in that, you know, not everything that we touch, we're going to multiply by 10, but it gives you a sense of I'm going to learn a lot. I'm going to get a lot more done. I'm going to be a lot bigger. So 10Xing it is a fair example of an evocative name.
Yeah. And they can't copyright that, by the way, because there's other entities that use that same expression, 10X. So they can use it, but not, they can't patent it or copyright it, whatever.
Yeah,
wow.
I'd use 11X if I was him.
Now that's really cool. It's really provocative. So, hey, I'm going to let you go, but I have really appreciated this, and I'm sure my audience has as well. The things that you've thrown out, you know, you operate on a large scale, larger than where I'm at, larger than where probably the audience is. But as we said earlier, business principles are business principles. And you start with the business principles and don't turn your back on those and keep on pressing in and pressing on. You're going to be successful, right? Any final words that you might have advice for somebody?
I would say one of the problems in our world today is if we get something for free, we don't value it. But I'm going to give everybody something for free, and for God's sakes, value it because I usually sell it for money. So I want to give you three things to do. Number one, ideapros.com. Sign up as a free member. You're going to get a ton of stuff. If you want to be an entrepreneur, do yourself justice and learn. You got to learn. And that's a great place to learn. I have inside tips every single week. Number two, on Instagram, official Fred Carey, Cary. I have 500,000 followers on Instagram. And I just do 1 minute post every single day with different things you need to learn about how to be a better entrepreneur, how to start a business, how to be a better person, how to have a better family life. And on that, this is the biggest freebie, on my Instagram page, again, official Fred Carey, there's a link tree. And I think the top one on that link tree is a course on purpose-driven entrepreneurship. I usually charge about $500 for that. I'm going to give you a code. Go big.
All right.
Okay, go big is the code. If you go on there and you sign up, go big, you get it for free. It's 15 modules, everything you want to learn as an entrepreneur. Go big or go home, as they say.
But yeah, right. So purpose-driven.
Purpose-driven entrepreneurship.
Okay.
It's 15 modules. It's a masterclass. And I think what we have is, you know what, let me go right to my page and make sure I got it right. And
that's on Instagram also.
Yeah, that's on Instagram. And if you go on the link tree, the very first thing you're going to, excuse me, the very first thing you're going to see on the link tree is the Wealthy Entrepreneur's Guide to Happiness. That's it. Click on it and use that code, go big, and you're going to get you're going to get it all for free, all this stuff. All right.
Wow.
So thanks so much. And I appreciate you. And I appreciate the journey that all of us are going on. And hopefully I can help you guys expand.
That's
on that
cool. You know, we're all in this together in one way or another, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're all trying to make better lives for ourselves and ultimately a better world for those who come after us and even for our families and so on. So I was going to ask you how people can get in contact with you, but you just said so. So
okay, that's
set
it.
With that. And so cool. So exciting to be seeing you doing what you're doing in the marketplace and developing these startups into no doubt massive companies that if you were to list them out, we probably heard of a number of them. So anyway, good job. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you folks for tuning in, for watching and for listening to Fred and me kind of pick his brain a little bit and the offering that he made. Don't forget ideapros.com. Don't forget official Fred Carey on Instagram. And don't forget the $500 value Wealthy Entrepreneur's Guide to Happiness. Okay. You can be an entrepreneur, you can be a business owner, but you can still be happy in the whole process. For me, it's provided me with a great deal of satisfaction. The money hasn't been bad either, but the satisfaction is priceless. So anyway, folks, thanks for tuning in and we'll see you next time down the road. Okay.
Over. All right. Thank you.
Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com, call 386-286-2450, or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy.com. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.